Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
I'm Megan O'Connor in my kitchen in Chicago, and as always on Monday, I get the pleasure of talking and cooking with my sister Trisha from Columbus, Ohio. How's it going, Trisha?
Good. It is a pleasure cooking with me. Just kidding. Well, everyone should do it. My neighbors should come over more often and cook. Just kidding. Maybe that's why they don't come, because I think that. Just kidding. Welcome to Monday, Megan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It's still so cold here, and
Well, good, because I think that you're making a food that is good for cold weather. It's probably good all year round. I take it back.
Well, if you talk to our guests, she will tell you that you shouldn't really sit down for a meal without it. So today we have a special guest from Appalachia, Kentucky.
Appalachia.
Oh, is that what she said after I just specifically asked her how to say it, and then I said it backwards? Kentucky, Appalachia. And she can tell us all about where exactly and what that means when you say that. But we met Joyce really through social media, and for those of you who will go look her up later, you will recognize her by the humongously fabulous hat that she's wearing in her picture. And I have to admit, that's what immediately drew me to her. And I thought, I want to talk to her because I like that hat.
That's good.
Yeah. So I contacted Joyce and just wanted to hear what was going on under that hat. And she had lots of things to say about her local community, about what she's doing there, what she loves in Kentucky, Appalachia, and her thoughts about, you know, how the more traditional food from that region is, in her belief, is going to kind of take off, and it's going to be the next big trend in some of our own food circles around the rest of the country. So
I support her totally, because if it's true, then we're ahead of the game. We're at the forefront, Megan. That makes us trendy. So let's keep our fingers crossed that we can post this podcast some other time ago. Remember when we were totally ahead of the game?
We were on the cutting edge with Joyce and her hat.
Yes.
Yes.
That's cool. So what are you making today that represents Joyce in Kentucky, Appalachia?
Cornbread.
Cornbread. Yep. I'm jealous of the one that you're making, though. Tell me about it.
Well, don't be jealous, but so Joyce and I were talking on the phone, and we were talking about, well, all kinds of things, but cornbread came up, and she was telling me that really there are two different kinds of cornbread that are pretty traditional and on every table every day and at one time or another, and one was what I would consider a more traditional cornbread, although she gave me a few tips that we can talk about on how to make it special. And then the other was fried cornbread, which is what you're making today, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So mine's cast iron skillet, bacon grease on the bottom. And what Joyce said to me was, you're going to put that cast iron skillet in the oven at about 450. You're going to get that bacon grease really, really nice and hot. And then you're going to put your batter in. It's going to sizzle as it goes in.
Ooh, so, that's fun.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about that because I need a little more bacon grease in my life.
Well, it's funny because you assigned me my portion, my fried cornbread, which is good. I'm glad. My kids are going to love this, and I've always wanted to know how to do it. But yesterday, remember when we were little and we'd sit down to dinner, all seven of us around the table, and we'd be eating, and it would be fun, and Dad would ask us what we learned that day, and then Mom would go, the rolls!
Yeah.
And run to the oven, and we would have burnt rolls with every meal.
Yeah, I remember that, sure. It still happens. Haven't you been home for Christmas? Well, the same thing.
Well, the same story is happening in my house, but we don't have bacon that often around here. Like, so when we have bacon, it's not that I'm against bacon or for it. I'm kind of bacon neutral. I like it, right? But we had bacon this week, and you told me about this cornbread, and I was like, okay, I'm going to make it again. I'm going to make bacon again because I want to get the bacon grease because I want to do what you're doing. Like our whole childhood where I say, I want to do what Megan's doing. But this is how it goes in my house. I learned to do bacon in the oven.
Oh.
For some reason, every time we do bacon in the oven, every time, I never set the timer. Every stinking time. And we sat down, we had tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches and tuna melts, and we were going to sprinkle, I was going to crumble the bacon on top of the soup or whatever. And we sat down, we're eating, and I was like, ah, the bacon! And it came out like, I totally ruined it. And it's not the first time. It's almost every stinking time. But
well,
I saved the bacon fat, and I'm wondering if I've burned the bacon fat. Like, is it possible that my fat is going to taste burnt?
I don't know, but here's my advice to you. Do what I do, well, the timer is one option, and it's a pretty good one. It's been used for generations. But my smoke alarm just goes off.
Oh.
Pretty much every time I put anything in the oven. So I always know when something's starting to get a little bit too hot and smoky because my smoke alarm goes off.
That's hilarious because our smoke alarm goes off all the time, but it's from the heat of the kitchen, but it never goes off with the bacon. I think I'm staring at it right now. I'm like, I think it's got something against me. It's trying to make sure that I ruin the bacon every time. But so our kids one day will be on their radio show saying, remember we grew up and we all sat around the table and Mom constantly burned the bacon? That's their story.
And my kids will say, remember every night when Mom made dinner and we all had to go outside in our bare feet because the smoke alarm went off? Because I still make them go every time.
And roll out pie dough while we're there, because you're supposed to roll out
pie dough. The looks I get on their way out the back door are just priceless, really, because the smoke alarm goes off constantly in this house. And I'm still like, come on, let's go. This could be real. You have no idea.
Okay, so we've totally digressed from Joyce, who's coming on our show. But so we're going to be making cornbread that represents her type of cuisine. What else should we know about her before we bring her on, Meg?
Well, you know what? She is just a mover and a shaker. That's what I love about her. She has taken her, you know, her roots and her love of her community, and she's just out there moving and shaking at the farmers markets. She's a writer, so she's constantly writing about the region. She's an avid gardener. She lives in a barn, okay? She lives in a barn.
Did you grow up in a barn?
She didn't. She told me very specifically she was not born in a barn, but she does live in a barn, and she just seems so happy and excited about what she's doing, and I was just inspired by her. So that's, you know, I think we'll learn a little bit about Kentucky Appalachia, but we'll probably learn a little bit more about Joyce today, and I'm happy about that because I think she's got a lot of fun to share with us.
Now, should we be drinking bourbon?
We should be.
But we're not. Are you? Maybe you are.
I have some Maker's Mark, right? Well, I'd have to take my headset off at the break. But it's not far.
Don't do it because I don't have any bourbon in my house right now, I'm ashamed to say, and I'll feel left out.
Oh, well, all right. I just won't tell you.
That sounds good. Like all the other times, just don't let me know.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, I am getting my batter ready for my fried cornbread, which I think, like, when I think of fried cornbread, I'm thinking of, like, lots of oil, but that's not the case here. It's basically, like I'm making a pancake, but with just maybe a little bit more oil.
Yeah,
the thing I like about this recipe.
What?
Yeah, not a hush puppy. No.
It's a pancake, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pancake. The thing I love about this kind of recipe, too, though, is that I'm just blending all the ingredients together in a large bowl. Sometimes I want a break from having a wet ingredients bowl and a dry ingredients bowl, and today I got it. So I'm feeling pretty lucky. So I got my cornmeal and my flour and my baking powder. But you know what I'm going to have to ask her about? And I'm going to wait till she gets on and we get to know her a little bit and she's comfortable with me and my crazy questions. But I don't have buttermilk in my pantry right now. I have, not that I would keep it in the pantry. I'd keep it in the fridge. Maybe in my root cellar, but in the fridge. So I know that we can make but can't you make buttermilk? Like
something about vinegar, putting vinegar in your milk or something.
Or maybe lemon juice or something. So hopefully she can help me out with that. But my kids are going to love these. So I'm excited about knowing how to do this. And I'm feeling very authentic.
Well, you should be, except it's interesting because, and we really do have to take a break because she has so much to share with us, but she told me that you shouldn't put flour in your cornbread. I looked for a cornbread recipe without flour, and I could not find one, and luckily Joyce saved me this morning and sent me one. So I don't know if that's true of fried cornbread or just this cast iron skillet cornbread. We have got to go to a break because we have too much to ask Joyce.
Okay.
So, we will be back in just a few minutes with Joyce and No Chefs Allowed.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Everybody to No Chefs Allowed. I am in my kitchen in Chicago. This is Megan, and as always, my sister Trisha is here to talk and cook with me from her kitchen in Columbus, Ohio. And today we have a special guest, Joyce Pinson. Her blog is called FriendsDriftIn.com, and she is here to share her knowledge and passion about Kentucky Appalachia, the food, the farms, the recipes, et cetera. So, Joyce, are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome.
Let's talk about Appalachia. Tell me what I need to know.
Well,
I'm
located right at the point where West Virginia and Kentucky join. I'm in the East Kentucky coal fields. We have a proud tradition of arts and crafts, bluegrass music. U.S. 23, which is called the Country Music Highway, runs right through my county, which is Pike County, Kentucky, the largest county east of the Mississippi River. And I live in the mountains, and every day my view is an amazing view that changes with the seasons.
Well, that sounds so nice. Because we have U.S. 23 going through my town in Columbus, Ohio, but there's no one playing bluegrass on it. There's just lots of traffic. Yours sounds so nice. Oh, let's just rest in your view for just a second.
Okay.
That's awesome. So Megan tells me that you live in a barn.
I do. I live in a big red barn right next to a coal mine. I overlook I overlook the mountains and a train that goes by every day. Beautiful. My garden is down below me, and so I can go down to the garden, and I have some chickens, and I'm a very much a farm girl, but I also wear pointy-toed high heels, so I go from the corporate boardroom to the barn with no trouble at all.
I'm glad you don't. Do you kick off the heels before you hit the barn, or do you just take them right in to feed the chickens?
Well, like people in Columbus and like people in Chicago, you know, sometimes we hillbillies wear our shoes and sometimes we don't.
I like you. I don't have any shoes on right now, so boy, we are getting along. That's awesome. So tell me about your love for food. Have you always had a love for food?
I've been cooking since I was old enough to stand on a stool and be beside my mama, and I was blessed that I had two great-grandmothers living when I was young, and so I learned from my great-grandmas and my grandmas and the neighbors, and yes, I've been cooking. I learned in 4-H a lot. I started 4-H when I was 9 years old, and so I was cooking competitively and doing cooking demonstrations even at that young age, and you know, everybody's got to eat, and you got to know how to cook, and cooking real food is important, and not just for the taste, but also for the economy and value.
Yes. So you're using your blog, friendsdriftin.com, and that's two N's, like in, like I can come stay with you, right?
Yes, ma'am.
But you're using that blog to get the word out about your area and what's going on with food there, right?
Right. So many people equate Appalachia with sadness and desolation and depression. And there's a lot of good things going on here. And I'm very proud about our Appalachian foodways. I'm very proud about Kentucky agriculture and what is happening here in the mountains. It's we're having a big renaissance. Our Department of Agriculture just introduced a new brand called Appalachian Proud, which will give Kentucky farmers that are in the mountains a branding opportunity and help us band together to spread the good word about what the possibilities of Appalachia are. We call it Mountains of Potential. And we've been greatly overlooked. You know, we have lamps. We have something called autumn olives. We have ginseng. We have stacked apple pies. We have kilt lettuce salad. And we have so many things that are unique to our region that people don't know about. But they're going to be hearing about us in the next 2 or 3 years. I think Appalachia will be the next hot trend for southern food as we come from the deeper south, which they call the cornbread nation, on up into the upper south where I'm located. I think it's an exciting time to be a hillbilly, and I'm hillbilly proud, too.
I want to be a hillbilly. Darn it, I was born in the wrong place.
Well, we have a high concentration of what they call the out-migration from Appalachia. They did go to places like Columbus and Chicago to find work in manufacturing. So there's hillbillies all across the nation.
Well, I think I think Megan's kind of hillbilly because you said ramps. And she
yes, ma'am.
Ramps are those onions, aren't they early spring onions, wild onions?
They are, and if you eat enough of them, you're going to smell you coming before you ever see me in my big red hat.
Really? So they're stronger than normal onions?
Yes, ma'am.
So wait, tell our listeners who might not know what ramps are, because I didn't know what they were until a year ago.
They are, actually, they're a leek. They're a wild leek. When you go out to pick them, they look a lot like a lily as far as the leaves. They're a very broad leaf. A lot of folks around here have what they call a mattock to pull them up because you don't want to bruise them. They're selling for about $16 to $20 a pound, so it can be a huge economy maker for people here in Appalachia. Grow Appalachia, a nonprofit organization here, has been distributing seeds, and so a lot of people have been planting them so that we can have plenty of supply because there's a huge demand for it in the flatlands.
So do they grow better in the mountains?
They do. They like to be in a woodland area, kind of in a shaded dapple sunshine, and they like a north slope. And, you know, they like that the soil that is rich with leaf litter and that type of thing. And, I mean, it's a very short season. So, yeah, we call it ramps in the secret places because nobody will tell you. They'll say they might know where some ramps grow, but nobody will tell you exactly where. They just might know.
It's like treasure. And I was on a treasure hunt last year for ramps in this town, and that's what Trisha heard about ramps, because I wanted the pickle ramps, and I could not find them anywhere.
I never found them in Columbus either. But wait a minute, let's back up to the ramp smell, because couldn't you just follow the smell of somebody who knew where the ramps were if they make you smell? This is a strategic move for you, Joyce.
There's
just
a lot of stories.
Smell.
There's a story of one of my friends that was a school teacher, and she taught in a school that did not have air conditioning. And during ramp season, she would often set her students that had been eating too many ramps outside the window instead of in the classroom because
she's on the first floor.
hilarious. I like that innovative thinking for teachers. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Well, can we talk a little bit about our recipes now?
Sure.
You up for that? Because Megan said at the first section in our first segment that you had said an authentic cornbread doesn't have flour in it. And she said it almost as I was pouring a cup of flour into my fried cornbread batter. So have I been much right?
Well, and fried cornbread's a little bit different than what I call skillet cornbread. You know, what they say in the South is if you add sugar or if you add flour to cornbread, you may as well have cake. You know, that's not cornbread. True cornbread really doesn't have flour in it if you're in my area, because most people in our area have access to fresh ground cornmeal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if you're from somewhere else, or if it, you know, you might have a little flour in the mix, but down here we do it, you know, it's got to be straight cornmeal. And
well,
you know,
I went yesterday to the grocery store to get my cornmeal, and I was, you know, I had your voice in the back of my head saying, no flour, no flour, no flour, no flour. And up to that point, I still couldn't find a recipe with no flour, but I was convinced that I would by now. And I got there, and it was like there was yellow cornmeal, there was white cornmeal, then there was cornmeal mix. Oh, self-rising cornmeal mix. And so I looked at that, and I thought, and it said, includes flour, sugar, baking powder. It was a cake mix. You were in the cake mix aisle, Megan. So I didn't buy that, Joyce, because I knew that you would not approve.
You're exactly right. We're trying to be authentic here.
I bought the yellow cornmeal.
Yes, ma'am. Yellow cornbread will give you a more golden brown crust, and a, you know, it's just more eye appealing, and you know, it's got, I think it's got a little more of a corn taste. And I mean, you know, I'm all about the taste and the flavors.
Mhm. So would you say that cornmeal recipe that Megan has right now? I mean, is that a gluten free recipe?
Yes. No flour, so no, I mean, no wheat, so it would be gluten-free.
Well, that's good to know, because when you have friends over and you're making a big pot of chili and you want to have cornbread next to it, if they're gluten-free, I always had issues, but now I won't.
This is cornmeal, salt, baking soda, baking powder, an egg, and buttermilk, and bacon fat.
That's right. Now, you mentioned that you didn't have buttermilk. Now, Sometimes I use a little bit of milk and sour cream mixed up.
Oh, I have that.
If you got kids, you know, what's really fun is to take a heavy cream, put it in a mason jar, seal it up, make the kids shake it until it turns to butter and separates out, and what comes to the top is actually what would be buttermilk, and then you could use that. Or, like you had mentioned, you could take, like, a cup of whole milk and add a teaspoon of white vinegar to it, but I'd rather make the kids shake it up. It keeps them busy.
That's actually really fun. I do have cream. I have a new love-hate relationship with this product that you're going to be so ashamed of me, Joyce. Let's keep going.
Okay.
I'm not even going to tell you about it.
Is it that cream that doesn't need to be refrigerated?
Yes. It's probably sitting right next to that cornmeal cake mix that you were talking about. But yeah. Heavy cream that doesn't need to, it's shelf stable. And I always want to not buy it, but I'm sucked back in because I love using heavy cream every once in a while around here, but I never use the whole container when it's the refrigerated kind. And so it always goes bad and that kind of thing. And these are really small and they work perfect. But I'm wondering if they won't work to do that buttermilk thing. I'll have to try. I'm going to try every way and see. Today, though, I'm going to use whole milk and the vinegar because I'm here by myself, and I don't
use what you got.
My arms are tired. I'm gonna shake it. Okay, so then the cornmeal, the fried cornbread that I'm making is like a cornbread pancake, and flour is acceptable.
Yes, ma'am. Gives it a little bit of that gluten, helps it tighten up a little bit and hold its shape.
Now, can I use bacon fat in my recipe?
Yes, ma'am. You know, the most important thing with this recipe is, you know, after you don't want to stir it too much, but you want to let, after you get a batter, either with the skillet cornbread or with the fried cornbread, after you get the batter just barely mixed, if you just let it sit for 5 minutes, you know, you're going to let the leavening agents kind of work, and that'll make it a little bit lighter, and then you want your pan to be screaming hot. Now, you know, there's a lot of different ways to make a skillet hot, you know, to test it. I like to take a little bit of water and just flick it off of my fingernails, and if it sizzles, then I know that the pan is hot enough to go. I've seen some folks take a little bit of flour and just flick it in the cornmeal, you know, in the skillet with the grease, and see if the flour will dance a little bit. You know, if you're really good, you could just take your hand and hold it over that skillet. But now I just can't do it that way. I've got to see it. I'm a very visual kind of girl. So.
Okay. So we're going to get our pans screaming hot. So, Megan, what this is telling me is take the battery out of your smoke detector.
Right? Yeah, right. You're probably right. Good call.
We're both doomed. We both will end up outside, and Joyce will be doing the show by herself. So take those out, and then we'll move forward. Cool.
Good call.
I learned last week how to make Cuban black beans, and the kids loved them, and I think this is going to be the perfect accompaniment to that. So I'm ready to go. I'm ready to make them. Perfect.
Now, Trista, are you to make fries? So you make them like pancakes, but you don't put them in a deep fryer, do you?
I usually use our grill pan. But I'm getting out a pan with some sides. I don't have a cast iron skillet, but I'm going to go get one. But not right now. I am going to use the bacon fat in there, and then I'm going to fry these up like pancakes. So when we do pancakes, we don't have this much oil in the bottom. So this will give it a little more crispy outside. Right, Joyce?
Right. You don't want to get it, you know, you don't want it to soak, and that's the importance of getting the skillet really, really hot. Cast iron, buddy. You got to go find you a cast iron skillet.
I do. Well, I'm going to come down, and when I stay at the Friends Drift Inn, INN, I'll just shop for one right there. After you eat a bunch of ramps. Exactly. But
well, I might know where you could find some.
Yeah, you have a secret stash. Or gold mine, or treasure chest of ramps. Oh, goodness.
Okay, so I like that what you were talking about the farmers getting together, and you're building a brand based on all the produce that you that you're growing there. Like, tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it's not just produce. Appalachian agriculture is a little bit different in that we do a lot of foraging. So, you know, it's coming up on springtime. We would be out in the forest. We might be gathering dandelion greens or crazy greens, or, you know, our farmers are producing not only spring things, like if right now it's time to plant peas and radishes. We'll be putting out broccoli in a little bit. We're seeing a resurgence in our farmers markets, and, I mean, we sell out. A farmers market should go all day, and we sell out. People are lined up an hour before we open, and we're sold out within 2 hours. So, I mean, we're trying to bring more farmers into the system. I mean, we're not only about produce. There's a place called Good Shepherd Cheese up in Bath County, and they make sheep cheese.
Oh,
and then there's
no idea, Joyce, about sheep cheese. We'll talk about that some other day, but I think I may be coming down to visit you.
We have a guy that does a mushroom farm, a Sheltaway Farm mushroom farm. We have a lot of different, you know, and of course we have livestock, a lot of heritage breeds. We're very much into preserving things that are specific to Appalachia, like a fall bean or a cushaw, which is a winter squash. These are the flavors of Appalachia that I think the rest of the world is ready to be introduced to. Cushaws would go really great with your black beans. I mean, it would be really have that Cuban south of the border. It would really lend itself to that.
What does that squash look like? Yeah.
A Kushaw squash. I used to think when I was a kid, when I was about 5 years old, so you can picture me being kind of short, and my grandpa had a farm stand and a honey stand, and he would line up all the Kushaws, and I said they looked like big angry geese with green pinstripes. So, you know, they've got a big crook neck. They go anywhere from 15 to 30 pounds, depending on what farmer and what type they're growing.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like I bought that before, but is it possible that I bought that with gourds and stuff for at Halloween?
No offense. A lot of Yankee folks like to put them out in the yard for autumn.
Yeah.
autumn. But they're good eating. I mean, they're really good eating.
What are we doing? We're so wasteful up north. Well, that's how you know, Tricia, if your next-door neighbor is actually, you know, a transplanted hillbilly or not. If those squash are outside, then they are not a hillbilly.
No.
So check them off the list.
You can you imagine that? A 15-pound squash? I mean, that's massive.
15 would be, I would turn my nose up at 15. I once wrestled with Chef Ed Lee from Louisville over a 22-pound white Kushaw at the Louisville Farmers Market. I let him win because I like him.
Did you win? Were you wearing heels? Because that puts you down a notch.
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
Yes, ma'am, with a big point on them.
I like that. Wow, that's hilarious. I wish I could get my hands on one, but these Yankees...
They're usually, it's really out of season. You know, that would definitely be a fall thing.
I'm writing it down.
Writing it down. Spring. I can't even say the name of that. Squash fall.
Kushaw
squash. Kushaw.
C-U-S-H-A-W.
Okay. Maybe that should be our monthly ingredient challenge come the fall.
The fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we'd only have to buy one, and then we could work on it all month long.
Oh, yes, ma'am. You just bake them off and, you know, put them in the oven, bake them off, and then bring them back out and just run a immersion blender. We call them a boat motor. Run a boat motor through it to kind of break it up a little bit. You can freeze it, and, you know, you're good to go for months.
I'm still, you lost me a boat motor. Stop paying attention. What was the rest of that? No, I'm just kidding.
An immersion blender? You know, a handheld blender.
Yeah, I have one of those.
I think that's how you make boys in the kitchen.
I knew you did. I knew you did.
Tricia, that's how you get your boys in the kitchen. Say, hey, somebody grab the boat motor.
Seriously. No, with my kids, I'm trying to boot them out sometimes. They're like, what can I do?
I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Break, don't you think, Tricia? Let's take a quick break, and I've got to get my smoke detector out of the house, and then or at least on the back porch.
Cool.
And then Joyce, if you can stick with us for just a few more minutes, we'd love to chat even a little bit more.
I'd love to be with No Chefs Allowed.
All right, folks, we'll be back in just a few minutes with No Chefs Allowed.
And welcome back to No Chefs Allowed. We are talking with Joyce today from Friends Drift Inn, and she's teaching us all about, am I going to do this right? Kentucky Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Appalachia Kentucky? I think we're messing it up, Joyce. Correct us.
No, it's Kentucky's Appalachia.
Kentucky's with a possessive. Possible,
sure.
Yes.
Kentucky's Appalachia and all the cool things that are going on there, but... Joyce, I want to talk about you and your blog, Friends Drift Inn, and what you're doing with it.
Well, it's called Friends Drift Inn, Recipes, Gardening, and Hot Flashes. When I hit 50, I thought my life was going to end, and then I found out it was just beginning. I wear a big red hat, you know, to just say, hey, I'm here, I'm in the building. I wear pointy-toed shoes. They're usually red. That's a reference to The Wizard of Oz, No Place Like Home. Appalachia is my home. I'm proud to be a hillbilly. The Friends Drift Inn was inspired by my grandparents' restaurant, Friends Drift Inn, which was on the Ohio River in northern Kentucky back in the late 50s and early 60s. They were ahead of their time as far as the farm-to-table movement. Grandpa had a commercial orchard. He grew bees. We grew a lot of the produce that went into the restaurant. It was definitely farm to table, and that we'd go out and pull it, wash it, and it would hit the table in about 15 minutes.
That's awesome.
You know, we were very self-sufficient, and I think everybody should think about where their food comes from, and if they don't have the ability to grow it, I hope they will seek out a farmer and, you know your food and know your farmer. That's part of the legacy of Appalachia is I think we have a very strong sense of place. We know, you know, the land that I farm on is the same land that six generations of my husband's family have farmed on. When I look up to the hill that overlooks my garden, there's a cemetery there, and that's where his ancestors lie. And I know that when I'm planting my seeds in the spring, that they're looking down on me with approval, because it's what we've always done. We've taken care of our family, and we've been proud of who we are and what we are, and no matter where you live, you should be proud of your place and the traditions that are your family and not be ashamed of them. So it's a very emotional place to live. I mean, you really feel the moods of many generations here in Appalachia. And it's like having one foot in the past and one foot in the future. And it's so exciting.
It sounds exciting, and it sounds so stable. And I think that, so the recipes that you're putting on your site, those are things that have come from generations of cooking in Appalachia.
Most of them are inspired by my family. I'm working on a cookbook and that type of, you know, from the family and from my neighbors and cousins and people that I've come across as I travel. I do a feature article for our local newspaper, the Appalachian News Express. And so I get to travel from time to time, and I meet chefs and I meet farmers, and I really get to see life from their side. And then I apply it back to what we do here in Appalachia, and I try to make the people that live here understand how much we influence the world outside. And for the people that are not from Appalachia, I try to make them understand that there are many dimensions to Appalachia, and it's a fun place to live.
Well, if you're there, it sounds fun, in your hat, in your heels.
It's a fun place to eat.
And her barn and her chickens.
Yes,
so tell me about some of the people you're meeting through Friends Drift Inn. Like, any cool chef stories you want to share with us?
Oh, one of my favorite chef stories is Chef Sean Bronk. Sean Bronk is known for Husk Restaurant and McCready's Restaurant in Charleston, South Carolina. However, he grew up in Wise County, Virginia, which is just one mountain over from where I am right now in Platte County. And one mountain over, yes, ma'am. And his perspective on food is very much about going out in the garden, following your grandma as she's picking the beans. It's about muscadine grapes. It's about going out in the hills and eating ramps. You know, Sean, when I first met him, he had just been interviewed by a big magazine out of New York, and he was tired, and he was going to give me 15 minutes, and then he finally realized that I talked a little bit different, and it occurred to him to ask. He said, "Now, where did you say you were from?" And when I said Pottville with a big long I, he just rolled back his head, and he laughed, and instead of 15 minutes, I got a two-hour interview. And, I mean, he's just one of the most delightful, down-to-earth. He's a homeboy, and, you know, he's from the hills. My favorite quote Sean Bronk ever said to me is, "I'm so proud of where I come from. It hurts." And for me, that gave me permission to be a hillbilly, because sometimes you hide, you know, you hide in your head when people say, "Oh, you're just nothing but a dumb hillbilly." And that's just not the case. you know, and so it's okay to be a hillbilly, and it's okay to enjoy hillbilly comfort food, peasant food like cornbread and soup beans. This is what we call pinto beans and green onions. We don't eat scallions down here in the mountains. We eat green onions, and it's a very simple way to live, and
it's really interesting.
A liberating way to live, you know. They say we're. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, not to get too corny on you, but you know, you talk so much about family, but it feels like, you know, what you're doing with Friends Drift In and your column and your day to day life is, you know, addressing that bigger family, which is your community. You know, I mean, bringing everybody together on your website through your recipes, hopefully with a cookbook, I think is really just a way of saying this family is bigger than, you know, my husband, my children, my parents, my grandparents. It's this whole community.
The Appalachian table is what you make of it, you know. So, yes, it's a big table and it's open to anybody. And I think that that's true, you know, across the nation, you know. People need to come to the table and remember that you eat as a family. Michael Vitaggio from the Vitaggio brothers, I never say it quite right, but, you know, he said when he worked at the Greenbrier, which is a very fancy resort in West Virginia, that, you know, that one of the things that he learned when he was here in Appalachia was our strong sense of family and how everybody was welcome at the table. When you go to a house here in Appalachia, the first thing they're going to say to you is, have you eaten yet? You know, it's very important to us that people are fed. And, you know, that's just part
Italian.
Of our castability.
Megan and I grew up in an Italian household, and that's the kind of the same kind of thing where it's like, have you eaten? Come down, sit, eat.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's part of our culture, and I mean, it's part of a lot of people's culture. And that, you know, food is what brings everybody together.
So okay, we have time for one more question, Joyce. Although I could talk to you for 2 hours like that chef did. But if I was coming to your house and coming to your table, and I wanted authentic meal from your community, and you only had one shot to serve me, what meal would you pick out to define it?
It would be cornbread.
Got it.
Pinto beans, which we call soup beans. You'd have an order of fried potatoes on the side. We would put that, we might cup that under the whole thing, would be some fresh spring lettuce. So you'd take the spring lettuce as your layer, put the soup beans on top of that, put a little potatoes to the side. A big hunk of cornbread. Of course, you never cut cornbread near here in Appalachia. You break it. We break bread. And maybe we would throw in a little bourbon on the side or some moonshine. I might know where you could get some moonshine. You know, but I think that would be very much what you would find in any house in Appalachia. It identifies us.
I'm going to make those beans because, Tricia, these beans are, like, not, they're mushy, right, Joyce?
We cook them down very much. I mean, they're not quite like a refried bean, but you could, you know, you cook them to the point that if you put that boat motor in them, you could make refried beans real quick.
Got it.
All circling back around now, isn't it? I like that. Okay, I said we had time for one last question, but I'm throwing in one more. Megan and I have started Nutritious Lab by working with one monthly ingredient at a time, and basically what we learned each month is that if we worked with this ingredient, it would either become a staple because we'd be comfortable with it in our house, or we'd discover we didn't quite like it or whatever. And this month it's quail. Have you ever worked with quail?
I love quail.
Tell us what to do.
Well, now, I'm not as good with meats as I am with vegetables, but one of the ways that I like to do quail is something that I was inspired by Chef Ed Lee from Louisville. And he does quail, and he glazes it with sorghum. Sorghum is not molasses. Molasses is a byproduct of sugar. Sorghum is a cane that is squeezed and very indicative of what we grow here in Appalachia. But it's squeezed and it's cooked down and it's run through this series of a steam table and it goes through all these gates and then it comes out and it's this really deep, thick syrup. And it just is so rich. And maybe put a little bit of orange with it to give it a zing. But that's the way I would fix it. I would definitely do some kind of sorghum glaze on it.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, Joyce, it has been a pleasure. Everyone, you should check out her blog at Friends Drift Inn, like the, because you read that and you think it's like Friends Drift Inn, like you're walking in, but it's the inn, like INN.com. And you can learn more about her there. And she has some YouTube videos and episodes and all that kind of good stuff as well. So, Joyce, thank you so much for joining us today.
Megan and Tricia, it's been a real pleasure.
Good, good. I like
it. All right. Don't eat too many ramps. We don't want to smell you coming. Smell you later, Joyce.
Thanks a bunch.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Tricia, that was fun.
Yeah, she's a hoot. I'm so glad you found her. You're like two for two, man. Last week and this week. Finding interesting people. Keep it up.
Keep it up.
Okay. Is your cast iron skillet hot?
Yeah. I haven't been doing what I'm supposed to do. Not ready. My skillet is in the oven. It's getting hot, but I don't have my batter ready yet because I was listening to Joyce and you.
We're gonna have to get like a no chef's cam so I can see what you're doing. So I know that you're pulling your weight and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think I'm ready to go.
Okay. Bye.
No, I'm
oh.
Hilarious. If you're not ready, I'm ready to go. I'm leaving.
I'm ready to go now.
I'm ready to go.
Ready to fry?
I'm getting ready to fry. I did the whole whole milk with vinegar. So I hope it works because now that I'm thinking about it, every time I've done that, it usually says in the recipe if you do that to add some baking soda. So now I'm wondering if I messed this up. If I did mess it up, I'm going to do it again with real buttermilk because they're smelling good and they're looking good and my kids are going to love them. So this will be an easy side dish.
Yeah. Are you going to serve them sweet or savory or what are you doing with them tonight?
You're doing it
with the beans. That's right. I forgot.
And okay. There's honey in this batter. So they're naturally kind of sweet and the cornmeal is kind of sweet. So, I mean, honestly though, the batter, it's like making a pancake. I think that we could put maple syrup on them if we wanted.
Well, yeah, because she was talking about when I was on the phone with her earlier, you know, last week, she was talking about sorghum again and talking about putting sorghum on them.
Well, that's funny. Dad introduced me to sorghum a long time ago when we were at this historical farm, and I was like, hey, kid, look at this corn. And he looked at me and said, that's sorghum. And I was like, what, huh? I'm like, how do you know that? But, you know, he grew up on a farm, so he did. But I knew what she was talking about, but it's, I've never seen it around here as a product. Maybe I haven't been looking.
I bet you can find it.
I might do that and put it on quail because that sounds kind of fun. I do have to go because my family's going to be home soon and I want to get dinner on this table. And this has been a blast.
Yep. Okay. So, folks, it is quail month. So go get yourself a quail and get started. And check us out on Facebook. See what we're doing. And as always, you can find us on NoChefSalad.com and find this radio show at HeritageRadioNetwork.com. So until next week, Tricia, have a great week, and I will talk to you next Monday. Goodbye, everybody.
Sounds great.
Chef Salad.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.